We're ready? Okay. Good morning. We're going to bring the meeting to order here. And I'm going to welcome you here. And then if we could, let's go around the room and introduce ourselves, just in case not everybody knows everybody. Start here. I'm Eileen Quiring, Council Chair.
Good morning. Tyson Vogler, Superintendent Principal at Green Mountain.
Steve Marshall, Superintendent of Hawkinson School District.
Mary Templeton, Superintendent of Washougal.
Thank you. Mark Ross, Superintendent of Battleground.
Michael Green, Superintendent of Woodland.
Brian Schlottman, Program Manager of Clark County Public Health.
I'm Lindsay Schaefer, I'm the Policy Analyst to the County Council.
And Julie Olson, County Council District 2, and also Vice Chair to the Council.
Okay, we have some, notes from the last meeting, not really called minutes, but I would entertain a motion to adopt the April 2019 meeting notes.
Move to adopt a note.
Second. It's been moved and seconded to accept or adopt the notes from our April 15th meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Hearing, seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Could we have your introduction?
Yeah, Mike Relina, Evergreen Superintendent. Sorry I'm late.
Thank you. No, it's fine. Traffic is terrible out there, right? Well, I mean, when I came in, it was bad. So. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about what Clark County has as sort of legislative priorities, but we also want to hear from you. But first, we'll hear from Lindsay, and she'll give us kind of a list of what we're talking about this year with the legislators.
Well, largely this is going to be a discussion from the two councilors to my right. But what I passed out earlier, this is what the County Council is looking at for our 2020 legislative agenda. We met with the legislative delegation from the 17th, 18th, and 49th legislative districts. We met with them last week. It was a really good meeting. But these are in no way final. I think that it's fair to say, though, the priorities listed on the front of the sheet are definitely going to be in the final legislative priority in one way, shape, or form. And then the back of the sheet are some newer ones that have popped up or some ones where we're just supporting other requests or supporting our, you know, WASAC in terms of a county statewide led priority. So this is a tentative list. Some of these will have more of a tangential impact on the school districts, and I don't think that there's anything that has a direct correlation or something where it really dovetails probably with your priorities. But I'm going to let the counselors talk through these priorities, but I'm happy to answer any in-depth questions or anything.
Okay. So the first one on the list is the economic development sales tax, which is expiring. Clark County normally was not part of that, but this is keeping 0.09% of the sales tax that comes in and use it for economic development. My understanding is it'll be worked on this particular session, but action may not happen on that. But we want to be a part of that so that we can glean some of the sales tax. As you all know, we're a border county, and we lose sales tax. Therefore, really, I think it's been figured out that it's about $24 million that we lose annually because our constituents go over and shop in Oregon and don't have to pay sales tax on that. I'm going to let Julie talk about the 179th, but just in between that is we're also asking for the expansion of the multifamily tax exemption to counties. This would most likely take place like in unincorporated areas like Hazel Dell and that kind of thing, where it's close to the city and has transportation, has bus service, et cetera. It's that kind of a thing where it denotes that anybody building these sort of facilities would have to set aside a certain portion for affordable housing, a certain percentage, and that I'm Lindsay may know exactly what those things are if you want to get into that, the percentage. We talked about that with the legislators. So I'll hand it over to Julie for this 179.
Do you want to talk about the MFP?
Sure, and we'll just piggyback on the multifamily tax exemption. Let me just go into more detail. And then there may be really an impact potentially on Vancouver schools if there are a number of units built taking advantage of that credit.
But the thing about the multifamily tax exemption and where we would really want to, I think, partner with the school districts is that currently the multifamily tax exemption is allowed only within city boundaries. And it's also only allowed within cities of population over 15,000. So some of the smaller cities are coming in and saying we have a need for affordable housing as well, and that may impact some of our smaller districts if that goes that route. But for the county, this is really looking at the urbanized areas we have that are in the county but are outside of the city limits of Vancouver, which, as Councillor Olson said, really is primarily Hazeldale and that south Salmon Creek kind of area. But the county council would get to determine within the parameters of state law how restrictive beyond that they would want to be, what types of parameters they would want to put on those developments. So we've seen a number of developments, a number of affordable housing complexes use this within the city of Vancouver, and I think that there's been some interest to put those types of developments within kind of the Hazeldale area, but they can't take advantage of this tax credit. So, again, I think it's really probably primarily impacting Vancouver schools, if at all. And then on the 0.09, I think that's, as Councillor Quaring said, a longer-term conversation, and really those funds, they have to be used for economic development, so it's not general fund revenue to the county.
Yeah, and then with regard to 179th Street, excuse me, probably most of you know that we took some legislative action. We removed urban holding along 179th Street from I-5 to Northeast 50th Avenue. And we did hear quite a bit from Ridgefield School District about impact fees and the number of homes that could potentially be built. And a number of those homes will also are in the Battleground School District. So we're aware of that. And I think the immediate impact is going to be a few hundred homes over the next couple of years. I think they're going to start to look to break some ground maybe next year on a couple of those developments. But this particular ask is with regard to the interchange project and our coordination with WASDOT in terms of planning and engineering. So we're going to do our part on 179th Street, and we've got preliminary plans there. So as we continue to engineer and look to plan that construction, we also want to coordinate with WASDOT as the money gets closer for that interchange project. And so we're asking for another $1 million to continue engineering and planning in cooperation with WASDOT so that we can, as we get to 2023, we're ready to break ground on both 179th Street and the interchange in a coordinated fashion. We don't know that we'll get it. We have gotten, we've gotten some pre-money. We've got $500,000, I think, in the last biennium to help engineering and design. So we're optimistic that we'll continue to get support so that we can start construction earlier rather than later on that in that corridor. But generally, we're excited about the economic development opportunity there. It's going to be a mess for a while once it gets started, but I think the outcome will be what we all want, which is jobs and additional housing for folks that live here. So we're excited about it. But stay in touch with us if they're our issues with regard to the number, the housing and how it impacts your schools and transportation and all that kind of stuff, because we do want to work in coordination with you as well as development occurs.
Julie, if I could ask, so obviously we're concerned about the impact of the house and when housing, and we've been kind of in touch with the county planner about timing. Mm-hmm. So we're concerned about timing so we can look at future bonds. When you say interested in economic development, will there be industrial parks there then? I mean, what jobs will it bring in? I mean, obviously we can't tell, but I mean, will there be land set aside for industrial parks, businesses? It's not just all homes, I guess.
That's correct, yeah. So your particular school district will the economic development piece will be homes. The real economic development piece is around the interchange, where there'll be commercial and business park and all about light. There might be some light industrial zoning up there still, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where the bulk of the economic development will take place, is in and around the interchange. Most of the residential development will go east from there.
So we won't, okay. So yeah, we won't see a tax base.
You're going to see more rooftops.
Yeah.
We'll
see
homes, okay.
Yeah. And I think you'll probably see some, depending on how the planning and permitting goes, we may see some groundbreaking next year.
So the next one on the list, on the other side of the page, is recovery housing. We're still waiting for some more detail on from Lifeline Connections, and so this is kind of in the we're still waiting for some more detail from Lifeline Connections. And then there's the CASA issue with the YWCA has been receiving funds there, and it's federal funds, I believe, that are being a grant that is being terminated.
Right. So, I mean, from the school district standpoint, if you have a kiddo who's involved in certain legal proceedings, they're required by state law to have either a guardian ad litem or to have a CASA appointed to them to represent their interests, which sometimes the kiddo's interests don't always match the family's interests. So that's why you have that representation. And currently, our YWCA provides CASA services. They had been receiving a federal grant that covered about 25% of their expenses, close to $200,000. All of the federal VOCA grants went away, and there's five counties, including ours, that utilize a nonprofit. So we're working with Representative Stonier to try and get some state funds to backfill that in the short term to ensure those kiddos can still get a CASA. From the school perspective, though, if they don't have a CASA, the county has to provide them with a guardian ad litem.
Yeah.
So they will continue to have that representation. It's just a question of
who pays.
And who provides the service.
Right. And then there are, we're always asking for help for the unfunded mandate of indigent defense in the county from the state, since the Constitution requires it. And we're always in the hole with our indigent defense, and so we're asking for that. There's a particular bill that Senator Wilson has that is concerning just a property owner. And then the Boys and Girls Club, this is a small request because they were remodeling, or they figured there were seismic issues with the facility that they have. And so this is, you may be interested just because there are children that participate in this Boys and Girls Club. And it's very possible, it's the one, is it near Hazeldale?
It's the one in Hazeldale, right.
Yeah. So it would be the Vancouver School District primarily. So, comments, questions, and then we'd like to know actually what some of your legislative priorities would be.
Just a couple of thoughts back to the first two items, but the multifamily tax exemption, I think that's great for affordable housing, because we certainly need that in the community. The tug will be always impact fees that go along with that. We've been involved in a certain amount of that with the city because they've been able to take advantage of the tax-exempt projects. And it's always a challenge to how to address impact fees at the time when you've got the Growth Management Act that really kind of dictates growth, impact fees for growth, and housing is growth, but affordability is the question. So I suspect that that's going to be going to surface, particularly as we bring our new capital facilities plan updates this next year. I think Evergreen is, and this coming year. So,
how is the city handling that now with regard to school impact?
Well, they're pretty much leaving it up to school districts.
Whether to collect them or not? Or
whether to waive them or defer them.
And how has the school district been handling that?
Well, in Vancouver, we've, in most cases, elected not to defer them for a couple of reasons. One, it does impact growth. Mm-hmm. And two, in our recent bond program, part of our funding stream was due to impact fees. So feeling that we need to be true to what we've said and to the patrons that voted. So we've continued them, but it's often a challenge to get that message across.
I see. That's
there
a good point.
Anything specifically in that you mentioned no. about, so it's still up to the district to determine.
It's still going to be up to the district.
I know we haven't waived. Yeah.
No.
I do know that our plan that came through, though, reduced the multifamily rate significantly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Artificially, the rate got real high for evergreen.
Yeah.
That will help, but I don't think we've waived any either.
We have only waived for senior housing with covenants.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes more sense
right.
than the multifamily,
but that's very
for
few,
sure.
So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe just another comment on the Senate Bill 5899. I think, you know, that's also in keeping at least with our thinking on the regionalization factor of Portland and the impact that has on funding, not just on the tax side, but school districts as we look at operation funding and compare it to the larger cities in the state that don't have that that issue from a neighboring community to deal with. And one of our legislative priorities will be to try to keep that up front in the legislature about how the regionalization factor of Portland does impact Southwest Washington school district education community
Good.
Funding as well, so that those might work well together.
Well, and I can tell you, whatever conversations that you all have with regard to sales tax leakage and revenues, we would love to
yes.
do that. I mean, our general fund, our two largest sources are sales tax and property tax, and when we lose tens of millions of dollars every year to Oregon, that's a big impact on the services that we have that we can provide out of the general fund. So the more collective conversation we have with regard to opportunities to mitigate that, is we would appreciate that. So thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Any help that we can get with a conversation about our region and how we are impacted certainly is, and not only what contributes to the general fund is affected by our border. Basically, our general fund is taken up 80% with the
law and justice.
So we don't have very much flexible room. So anything that you can do, and I know that you folks do have some clout in the legislature, so thank you.
We have some other priorities, but I'll let others
yeah.
for a bit.
Comments? Other comments?
I know probably for Tyson and I, one of the bigger priorities is working on regionalization funding. Talks about the impact of the Portland metro area
yes.
and the regionalization funding. Tyson and I are both in this whole donut hole where
yeah.
all the districts surrounding us are receiving more money per pupil
yes.
Because of this wonky formula.
At least 6% more.
And,
wow.
So that's an interest certainly that we share. We all want to be like Camus.
Yeah.
Well, do very well with them.
To follow on what Michael's saying, I think it's the flaws in the regionalization that, so your district and mine, both they include Skamania County housing, because Skamania County is within 15 miles of the edge of my district. Although there's no homes in that portion of the county. It's just that it's a flawed model.
Mm-hmm.
So regionalization would be, and I don't want to speak for all the superintendents, but I would think simple majority on bonds would be pretty high. We're not
That'll
looking at a bond right now, but
yeah.
We may be.
Yeah.
Well, the post-McCleary K-12 funding model needs
work.
Needs work.
Yeah.
All of us agree to that.
We have a legislative forum in 3 weeks or something. special ed is considered part of basic ed. Basic ed is supposed to be covered from state funds, but we still have, I think, mm-hmm. 9 million, probably, what, maybe 9 million of our 40-some million in special ed funding comes from local levies. So that's one I know that everybody supports. Mm-hmm. We also are going to this new school employee benefits board mm-hmm. in January, and the funding, I think the legislature wanted to move forward with it because it provides a lot more access for health care for staff members, but they kind of artificially lowered the premium to a number that made their budget work.
Yeah.
And over time, that's not probably sustainable for the state to be able to handle that, and that will likely put more responsibility, more burden on local school districts for all of the unfunded positions that mm-hmm. we have. Also, it changes the access. You basically, and it's great for employees, and we're all employees too, but it's particularly really good for classified employees in school districts where if you work 3.5 hours a day, you have full coverage. And right now, if you work 3.5 or 4 hours a day, you may have some access to funds towards your contribution, but your out-of-pocket would have been what probably significant, upper hundreds, even into thousands. Mm-hmm. Certainly for families, it was really yeah. expensive. So it's much more affordable for individuals, so it was something, but we're school districts, we're not like, I think the idea was there was a lot of money that came into this SEB, and it was all this money coming for school districts. Well, the reality is more of a healthcare initiative than a school funding initiative. So we're looking for solutions to that because that's going to become a problem for us over time.
So your budgets are having to pick up the tab on that extra?
Unfunded for us in Washougal, we're like about $800,000 or $900,000. That's the cost additional for the implementation of this universal health care. We have a lot of positions that are not full-time. So then you think, what does that mean? It de-incentivizes us to provide positions that work for our employees. So that job share between the first grade teachers, because I want to stay home and raise a family part-time, those have to start being considered not feasible. That doesn't feel real good to us. Mm-hmm. And this is an additional unfunded mandate for school districts. And I don't think anybody here says it's not a good idea that folks should have health coverage. But we cannot continue to support these unfunded mandates, especially when the prototypical funding model, which is how we get money from the state, which is the McCleary model, it is flawed. And I'll let another colleague talk about the prototypical. That is also one of our priorities for our region, for ESD 112.
So a district the size of Battleground in the prototypical school model, we have 13,000 students. The state funds less than one full-time nurse for all of our students. And we actually fund nine. Mm-hmm. So we fund eight nurses above what the state would fund us. And that would be just one example. For a school psychologist at the middle school level, it would take something like 20,000 students at the middle school level for one funded school psychologist. And again, we have 9 or 10 school psychologists. So all of those extra costs are coming out of our levy, which are supposed to be enhancements. And of course, we now, with the concerns around social emotional learning, we would consider nurses and school psychs part of even basic education. But the state's prototypical model hasn't been updated since 1980s. So we know there's been a lot of changes in needs of students since then.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that there's any part of the formula within state law that accounts for districts, especially like Battleground, where you've got such a, in terms of your geographic size.
Yeah, that doesn't, take in the fact that we have 285 square miles, so it's doesn't, it's not practical for one nurse to serve Yakult and then down in Prairie.
Right, because they'd spend an hour, 2 hours in the car.
Yeah.
Not quite. Yeah.
Okay. So are they going to be, do you foresee that they will address this formula? Is this something that other districts are?
I'm not sure how much of a will there is in Olympia right now. They feel like they've done work.
Yes,
for school, and they're going to turn to other things. Priorities.
Indigent defense, we hope.
Two things around the court. One, around the prototypical schools, is an effort to just put into statute that it is reviewed at some point, like every 4 years or every 6 years, that they be required to actually look at what are the formula inputs.
Right, yes.
And makes sense to change. And then the second, I know, I think, because of exactly what Michael's saying, that they're kind of tired of dealing with school districts. Not that they don't love school districts.
No.
But I think that they would look at the prototypical school and say, if we were looking at that, let's look at funding more mental health. So what can we do around mental health pieces of the prototypical school? Yeah. And that would be a smaller amount, and it would be less impactful potentially. Mm-hmm. I think the regionalization is a huge issue, because Clark County's very vocal about, you know, the Portland market, but Michael's also right. Cowles County is already impacted by Clark County. Washougal was impacted by the way Camas was handled. And Camas is even going to get impacted because their number, even though it was higher, is getting rolled back every year. So that's it doesn't make any sense what they did. And, you know, you're 5 minutes, 10 minutes from La Center, but you're trying to compete with a salary schedule that isn't funded at the same level. So that's it'll be real difficult. And I think for me, the last thing that I would mention is that the state still hasn't really defined what a work day is for a teacher.
Yep.
And there's a committee that's theoretically trying to write a definition of what that means, and it's very political in terms of what that means and who's involved in coming up with that. So that's a significant thing to watch and for us to just try to provide input on.
And as we think about the compensation that we've provided to our teachers specifically, I think all of us are proud that we're offering a market rate to our employees in Washougal, and I think we're in the like maybe three or four within the region. Our starting wage for somebody with a bachelor's degree with no experience is about $54,000 for a 180-day contract, about $100,000 for those who have a master's degree with 16 years of experience for that 180-day contract. We're proud of that. We think it's important and it's right. But we now must move forward with other financial responsibilities, and we cannot continue to keep adding to salary as we are at market rate. And that's the concept of defining the workday. So we are eager to continue to kind of highlight that message that it's professional pay for professional work. And this committee that Mr. Merlino referenced said this is a possible mental model for a teacher workday. Or our work experience. It's a full-time job because it's intense and it's really important, but it's compressed into 180 days, which just means there's a lot going on. And we ask our teachers to make sure that every child in your classroom is at standard. That's going to require a lot of creativity, innovation, hard work, and perseverance throughout the course of the 180 days. So we'll be talking a lot more about that, I would imagine, at our forum. And I just wanted to just highlight the WASO, so the Superintendent Association, the School Board Association, and ESD 112 all have the prototypical funding model on as one of their priorities.
As well as special ed.
As well as special ed, yeah.
Anything else? Todd, do you have anything to add?
No, I think.
Okay.
Well, it sounds to me like we have for sure we have one thing in common. Unfunded mandates. Yeah, yeah. I think your special ed problem, it was a problem we were talking about when I was on the school board a while ago. So, and it's like it's our indigent defense issue. I mean, this is a constitutional mandate. We spend $5 million a year on indigent defense, and we get $300,000 from the state. So those are two things we can work on together in terms of generally. I know it's something that they always hear, and I don't think they listen, but this unfunded mandate situation just gets worse and worse, it seems like.
The other thing, looking at your agenda and some of your legislative priorities, when we look at economic development in the county, and I know this is especially Mark, it's going to affect North County, is school construction and school siting. My district actually talks about every once in a while, will we build a secondary school at some point? And the cost of those camp of the property falls to the district still, which I have never understood. But if we don't address, even in
may be that the county somehow addresses, or the legislature, how to set aside school sites. Districts won't be able to afford them in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, if you need 20 or 30 acres for a high school, mm-hmm. try to buy 20 or 30 acres for a reasonable price in North County.
Yeah. Yes. Understood.
All of them. Yeah, and that has to be something as we look at economic development and expansion of the county, that mm-hmm. we really need to be looking 20 years in advance. We won't have school sites 20 years from now.
Oliver, when are we changing? We're updating based on the school siting bill that passed the legislature a couple of years ago. Where are we at with that? To allow the schools to be sited in the rural areas and still have water service.
There's a provision in the statute that allows rural schools to be, or schools to be sited in the rural area. There is no provision for what the acreage would be. And then another provision is that service providers can provide a tight line, sewer line to serve that school site. That's what is in the bill. And we've made an amendment to our code to provide for that, but the mechanism is not well, well defined. It's just a brand new legislation that we'll try to amend our code to provide for. It still calls for the service providers and local government, cities and counties, to come up with a mechanism to make that work.
If we don't have any more on our legislative priorities, I'll hand it over to Jenna.
The couple of things I wanted to mention while we're talking about county pieces, and this will hopefully dovetail into Jenna's piece. So I wanted to bring up the topic of the measles. Of course, last legislative session, that ended up being a topic of conversation that we weren't planning on. But check in with the schools in terms of both the legislation that passed and the exemption change in terms of the MMR vaccine, and then also kind of check in. I know from what I heard from public health, the school districts were fantastic partners, and we thank you for all of your work with when we were going through the measles outbreak. But kind of check in with you sort of after the fact and hear if there's anything that the county council should be aware of, anything that we should know for hopefully the next time that doesn't happen, but, you know, just kind of a check-in, see how that's going for you guys.
I was going to cover that in other, as well as the permits. So, do you have any comments about the reporting, et cetera?
Well, I think for us, having the 30 days this year was a bonus because we could really get the message out to our families. We went from 600 students that were going to be exempted down to about 102 weeks, and now we're down below 50, I believe. So we're a little concerned about next year when first day of school, there'll not be a 30-day grace period. So that could be tough, but we'll just have to get the message out sooner.
Yeah. Kind of an education process.
Yeah.
Which you guys are good at.
Do you anticipate that will be an issue next? I mean, it seems like there's constant education about the requirements.
There is, and we have a very strong, large homeschool program. We have over 900 students in our River Homelink program, K-12, so those families tend to be pretty anti-anything and pretty independent. So it's just a group that we have to convince, way ahead of time that they're not going to be able to come to school if they're, not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great.
Okay. That's something that could be potentially addressed if it's a real issue. Do other districts see that as well in terms of that 30-day? If it's down to, like, no grace period, you're going to have fewer kids or more kids excluded?
I think we would all agree that we'd like the 30-day grace period to continue.
I mean, I would think that. We should call up Representative Harris and say, can you do this little tweak?
Yeah.
It seems like, too, that it was not consistent around the state, because I hear Seattle still, their grace period goes until December.
Oh.
It just seems like it was up to a district to decide when things were going to happen. It would be nice if there was a little bit more consistency across the state, because we've gotten a few parents say, well, you know, we have friends up in this district that, you know, still have a grace period or still, you know, get to go until December. So it seems like the cutoff, I don't know, was different.
Yeah.
depending on what district you were at.
Okay, Jenna.
All right. So this is the second meeting of the year for this group, which I know this year was different than previous years since the group started meeting. For those of you who are new, I'll just recap what's happened. I think when the group started, maybe met four or five times initially, and then the group discussed what made sense moving forward, and this year decided to meet twice, once in the spring and once in the fall, with two main topics. So in the spring, it was about what's going on with planning and development in the county, and then this legislative priorities discussion in the fall. So my main question for all of you is, you know, how did that go? Did those topics make sense? You know, did meeting twice this year make sense? So that we can figure out what to do moving forward into next year based on, you know, what's working. So any thoughts on that?
It would make more sense if we had held this meeting after our legislative forum at the ESD.
Which is
November 17th?
November
15th. Is it that time always each year?
Typically in the beginning, the first
of November.
November.
So maybe we should move it then till after that meeting. Oh.
The attendance was not very
Yeah, I think December seems late.
Yeah. Would you all be okay if we basically did the same thing next year, but adjusted the timing a little bit of development and then legislation? Okay.
Potluck?
All right. And then my final question really is around providing an update to the county council. So you have two councilors here, and I think in the past they have been able to, you know, relay to the rest of the council. You all are okay with that. I imagine they would be willing to do that again, unless you would like to update the rest of the council in some other fashion. So would you be okay if they relayed to the rest of the group? Wonderful. Okay. Great. Well, that's all I have.
Okay. The other thing then, I just wanted to, under other, how did the permitting go? I mean, there's the permitting question, and how is that going?
Generally, well. For us, the schools team has been very responsive. We've collectively made an effort to meet regularly to discuss things in advance before they become critical timing-wise. So all in all, it's worked well for us and our projects.
Great. Yeah.
Way ahead of everything.
Right.
And I think the county's actually been
good news. We like to hear that.
Yeah. We have three schools, and I mean, you've got how many schools? We got three under construction, I think. Sifton, I think, is in the county. Heritage is in the county. It's got to be.
Yeah.
I think two of the schools probably are in the county right now. Actually, yeah, three of them. All three of them. So, yeah, we're doing well.
Could it be happy if you could train the city of Battleground to do it?
Oh, all right. Wow, that is good. We don't. We usually hear the reverse. Okay, are there any other updates or questions or announcements from you all? Yes, Brian.
Quick announcement. I sent an email to most of the superintendents, assistant superintendents, about our school health and safety technical advisory group that we're getting back going. November 13th is the date. The goal of the first meeting is we'll be talking about periodic inspections that are outlined in the WAC. And we really want this to be a collaborative effort, defining what does periodic mean, what our research has shown around other counties in the state, and also what do these inspections look like, make sure it's of value for everybody. So I've heard back from most of the districts. There's a lot of maintenance supervisors going, directors of maintenance, which is great because they're the ones that really make the decisions about what needs to be done in the schools. For superintendents, if you're not going to go, if you have questions, I'm happy to answer those about what our inspection schedule. We have a proposed inspection schedule. I'm happy to outline those details more if you're interested. I can meet with you one-on-one, or you can shoot me an email. So, yeah.
These are inspections of existing facilities?
They are, yeah.
Anything else? Thank you for that, Brian. Any further discussion?
Oh.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. Our next steps then, we'll meet in spring.
Yep. And so you'll see an email from me to work on scheduling. So I'll follow up with that.
All right. And then for our fall schedule, we'll try to meet after you've had your legislative priority meeting with your legislators. Well, thank you all for coming this morning in this traffic, bad traffic, something happened. Well, it's every day, really, but sometimes worse than others, so exactly. We appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you in the spring.
And if the need arises, please reach out to us if necessary. We don't have to wait for the meeting. If there